Thunder NBA Show. I am Chris Vernon. Today we have an extremely special guest. Sonny Vaccaro is a legendary shoe executive. He's the godfather of grassroots basketball. He was the subject of ESPN's 30 for 30 Soul Man, which you may have seen last year. For years and years, Sonny ran the biggest preps basketball camp and game in the country, the ABCD camp. He also worked for virtually every different shoe company and signed the likes of Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and Tracy McGrady. And he joins us today. Sonny!
Good afternoon, good morning, wherever we are across America. Hello, Chris. Good to be on.
So I mentioned the documentary, and a lot of people that don't know the story of your life got to learn a lot about your life in that ESPN documentary. But one of the things they did not mention was the end. So we'll get to the end, but let's start at the beginning, which is you made your bones, or I suppose became a big name in the basketball scene for signing Michael Jordan. Once upon a time, there was there was money to be spent. You guys were going to get into the business of signing players in order to endorse shoes, and you chose Jordan. I guess just a little background on that. Why did you choose Jordan at the time? Why was he the guy that you stumped for?
You know, Chris, this was before anyone was choosing people. Other athletes like Magic and Kareem and Dr. J had shoe deals, but it wasn't so much a choice thing. It wasn't a movement from a company, usually it was Converse at that time, to make them the signature athlete. That's the key to the Jordan signing. Other professional athletes got paid to shoot money. None of them had the shoe after them. None of them got paid, you know, proportionally on, you know, every shoe you sold, you made yourself an extra $5 or something like that. So that's what the decision was. My decision, my role in this whole thing, I didn't actually, was a lawyer, did the contract, but I was the man that fought through a few people at Nike to recommend Michael. That is your question. Why did I bet my young life at that time in my career, I guess, that's followed, on Jordan? There are things in everyone's mind when they have to make decisions they really don't have an answer to. I only know that I felt it, and as my life progressed, I sort of had that feeling on others, Chris, but it was a feeling. I only saw him one time in my life. It was when I played Georgetown. I was at the game. He didn't go to my camp. There was no camp then because of ABCD basically was going to be an extension of Jordan. And he didn't play my All-Star game. He played McDonald's and not the Dapper Dan. North Carolina was a pro, big-time Converse school. Dean Smith would never have anybody, you know, do this. So I never met him, but I had a feeling. And when I argued with the people, and I discussed with the people at Nike that they ought to bet all their money on the kid from North Carolina, he was still in school. Not too many kids from North Carolina left early. It was my first hunch as a someone who basically bet his job on it. That was the essence of it. I had a feeling, Chris. I'm sorry I can't go deeper, but it was a gut feeling.
You've had this feeling about other guys. One of the other big ones that you bet your career on was Kobe. And
Yes. As
the story goes, Kobe Bryant was playing in New Jersey, and you set up shop and actually got an apartment in New York to recruit him his senior year?
Well, you missed a little point. I knew Kobe through Kobe's father. He was the most valuable player in my Dapper Dan Roundball Classic in 1972. I had not seen him for 20 years. He went to college, he went to pros, and he went to Europe, and he had a child named Kobe along with, you know, a couple girls in the family, okay? But I don't know what happens to Joe Bryant. He's over in Italy. I then continued the ABCD camp. But it wasn't run by Nike then. I had gotten fired by Nike in 91. I started the ABCD camp. I continued it under Adidas's name. I started with Adidas. We had the camp in New Jersey. Joe Bryant calls me. He knows Gary Charles, one of my friends who ran AAU. And Joe got a hold of me. 20 years later, he said, I have a son. No one knows about him. He was going to Lower Merion High School. Understand, Lower Merion was an all-white, very rich district, and Kobe went to the school. It wasn't like he went to one of the powerhouses in Philadelphia, okay? So Joe tells me about him. I invite him to camp. He comes as a junior, a 15-year-old. I see him that whole summer. I see him at the camp, and I knew Adidas was now on the trail of starting a revitalization of their company. I had gone with Adidas with two old friends of mine from Nike, and we had to sign the right player. Just like Nike had to do it in 84, we had to do it with that class. I saw Kobe Bryant. Pam and I moved to New York City, physically moved. Adidas rented us a beautiful apartment on 63rd and 3rd. I'll never forget. It was the best year of my life on that kind of a circumstance. I never went to a high school game. I met Joe and Pam, who was his mother. Pam's brother also was a young man named Chubby Cox, who was a very good player at the University of San Francisco, who played my round ball. So I had this connection. I never knew Kobe. As I said, that year, his junior year at ABCD camp, Kobe comes to camp. Nobody knows about him. He has an unbelievable camp. It was more revealing than Tracy McGrady's, because Tracy has the most unique story of all time, because no one wanted him to come. But Kobe come out of nowhere. I'll never forget this. And one of the things, as you go through life, things surface and don't surface. One of the things I'll never forget about Kobe Bryant, it was an indicator of his indication of his life. Kobe runs over to me, Chris, and he gives me a hug and he says, "Thank you, Mr. Vaccaro, for inviting me to ABC, but I feel very bad." And I'll never forget, true statement. I said, "Why are you mad? You did great, Kobe." "No, I wasn't the MVP of the underclassmen. Next year I'm going to be the best player in camp." He said that to me on that hug, that July afternoon in Farley Dickinson University.
So do you remember who beat him out for the MVP?
I don't. I do have it, but I don't. That's a very good question. I should have that answer. No one ever asked me that question. Why did you ask me that? But he was. I'm going to find it. If we ever do a show again, I'll tell you. But anyway, go ahead.
All right, let's fast forward. And you mentioned McGrady in passing, and that's another great story. Let's get to that real quickly. McGrady, you say that Kobe was kind of an unknown when he was an underclassman. McGrady was a complete unknown when you signed him.
And the reason was, Tracy didn't have parents like Joe Bryant, and he didn't go to a school. Kobe had played ball in Europe. There was somebody, he was talented. We didn't create him at the camp, but he showed everything at the camp. Tracy McGrady was kicked out of his high school. He had a problem. It was a bad situation. I'm not going to go into it. The family had their own problems. The high school coach called me when I had a scout named Elvis Smith. That's how I was working those days. I had regional people in the AAUs who would tell me about players. I didn't see everybody play. And this guy, Elvis, said, "Sonny, this kid is brilliant. Please take him to camp." I said, "Okay, Elvis, what was his average? How many points did he get?" "He didn't play high school ball." "What do you mean he didn't play high school ball?" Now, this is like the eighth year of ABCD. We're pretty damn good now. And Kobe had just been there the year before, all that sort of stuff. Okay. I said, I can't take a guy who wasn't in high school. He said, "No, you got to take him." So I'm saying, okay, I had a propensity for listening to my guys do that. So I was going to do it. Then I got the high school coach call me. He, got on the phone. I never met the man, still haven't. And he just told me every bad thing you could say about an individual family and everything, to not take him to camp. I mean, it was horrible. According to this guy, Tracy murdered everybody in Ottawa, Florida. His family is the worst family in the world. All this sort of crap. And you know what? I'm going to be very honest. I had second thoughts. I'm running the camp. I don't want to take someone that's being portrayed to me as a gangster and someone's capable of doing bad, bad things. He didn't play in a team. So no one's ever seen him, Chris. Okay, so we understand that. So except this guy, Elvis. So now my wife gets involved. I swear this is exactly the way it happened again. She comes to me and says, "Sonny," I said, Sam's not really involved at that time. This is like 1995 or 96. I'm just starting Adidas going. We had Kobe. And she says, "I can't believe that someone would go after a kid like this. There's something wrong with his coach." And she said, "Why don't you check more and rely on Alice? Give this kid a chance." Okay. I did. I listened to my wife. We invited Tracy McGrady. Well, Tracy McGrady came with no acclaim at all. And we had a great class. Again, in those years, if any goes back to 1995, 1996 ABC camps, you're going to see some of the greatest players in the game, as lies printed up. Well, Tracy McGrady was not like Kobe. He won the MVP. He won the senior class. He won. He was unbelievable. I mean, and to this day, it resonates. There was a dunk that he did against somebody. But he was the greatest player that no one ever knew, because he never played anywhere. and the rest is history. He should go into Hall of Fame and all that sort of stuff. So these are two stories concurrently, and I know where you're going now because there's only four of them, right? The next one's the guy you're probably going to talk about. But that's the McGrady story.
That is for sure. All right, so we got to Jordan, we got to Kobe, we got to McGrady, and then there comes along a guy that you once again want to bet your career on, Sonny Vaccaro. You want to sign him to a shoe deal. At the time, you are working for Adidas. And when is the first time you heard of LeBron James?
At the NCAA championship game. I think it was in Atlanta. I'm not sure, but it was somewhere, maybe Detroit. Anyway, this group of young people come in from Akron, Ohio, and they had a video of a tape of this young player. Now, by then, the camp was resignating. We were something and all that sort of thing. And my name was synonymous. And they showed me on the, we had a suite there, the big table in the middle of the room. We removed the fruit and vegetables and all that stuff. And we put this old time, you know, the video machine where you put the tape in and it goes round and round. And they showed me a grainy picture of a kid playing basketball. He must have been eighth or ninth grade at the time. And Chris, not that I saw a million, not that I'm being whatever. You got to visualize this. I've seen a lot of them. And those things, what do you know? You see this kid running up and dunking and shooting and all that. And obviously he was talented. So I tell the guys, I never met them before, you know, and I make connection with, you know, Chris Dennis and all the other crew at Akron. I mean, that's basically, you know, how I met Maverick and Rich Paul and all these people. I mean, they're all in this one class. And Drew, his father was the coach of the team. But they showed me a film of this kid. They said, come and watch him play. And, you know, so whatever. So time passes. Then they want me to go back to Akron and watch him play. Like, he's now like a sophomore, I guess. He's going to his sophomore year or some darn thing. And it was playing a sophomore year. And I said, I'm not going to go to Akron. Can you, are you playing? Are they playing this summer? He said, well, they arranged a game with an AAU team, the Soldiers, one of the greatest summer league teams in the history, the Soldiers out of Oakland, California, you know, San Francisco, Oakland area. And they were one of the, and I'm big into this because we're running tournaments in Las Vegas, ABCD Camp is rolling, the Dapper Dan is rolling. And so they flew to scrimmage with the kids from the Soldiers, the team. And like I said, these were big, major players. This was a heck of an AAU team. So LeBron James, his mother, Eddie Jackson, the close friends of the family, the coach of the team, they come out. They come out, okay? And they're going to do it. They're going to do an exhibition for me and Pam. I fly up to San Francisco. We were living in Calabasas, California. I fly up. They rented they got this gym where I think the University of San Francisco's gym, ironically. And they scrimmage. And they're scrimmaging, and they put on this scrimmage for me. And, you know, the first 5 minutes of the scrimmage wasn't going so well. His pants were too big or whatever, and I'm sitting here watching. All of a sudden, there's a timeout. And I don't know what goes on the floor, but then history tells me that the coach said, what the hell are you doing? Let's go. He said, Coach, my pants are falling down. So they got all stripped. I watched LeBron James. Now, this is I watched him. You remember, I didn't see Michael till college. I never saw Kobe until he came to camp. I watched this gym. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not trying to impress your audience. I'm telling you facts. He goes up and down the court 5 or 6 times. It's maybe 5, 10 minutes or something like that. And, well, you had to really be blind not to know what you're watching out there, okay? And then he had sort of gotten this reputation. I said to myself, when I ran down the court, I said, listen, as far as I'm concerned, you guys can quit scrimmage and do whatever you want. I've seen enough. Can we talk? So I go see, you know, the coach, Gloria, Eddie, you know, the team. Young team James was now being formed. Pam and I get to the airport. We're rushing back to, you know, to Calabas, Los Angeles on the airplane. We took an earlier flight because I saw enough. This is factual, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, we get in this worst airplane ride I ever had in my life, and I've flown a lot of miles. I said to Pam, she's crying. People were, the stewardess dropped the tray. This is true. And again, you know, and I turned to Pam, and she said, oh, my God, and she's crying. I said, Pammy, don't you understand? It's one of the worst days of my life. And she said, I know, Sonny. And he said, no, I saw the greatest player in the world, and I'm not going to be able to talk about him. That happened also. The rest is history. We become very close friends with Gloria, his mother, who I love to this minute, okay? And Eddie, you know, Eddie eventually faded away, but I was very close to Eddie Jackson. He was very, very influential and still is in, you know, LeBron's life. And I recruited him. This one I recruited because he was only going into, you know, his junior year. He's coming to ABCD camp. Everyone knows the history at ABCD camp. He comes in, you know, known, but not nationally known. He beats Lenny Cook in the famous camp game of all time, all that sort of stuff. When I'm in, this is my next guy. And then
right, that's your next guy. If anybody goes back and looks and sees the St. Mary's stuff, he was always wearing Adidas. He was wearing Adidas in high school. You clearly had the high school. You had him under wraps for Adidas. So now we need to know, as the great Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. This is something that was not included in your documentary, which is the end of your shoe career. And it just so happens to be because of LeBron James. If you can't explain, so what happened with LeBron and what happened with the end of your shoe career?
Well, it wasn't the end of my shoe career because after I did what
right.
LeBron.
I mean Adidas.
Right, Adidas years. Yeah. We're rolling at Adidas now. Understand this. It wasn't like he was like Kobe or Tracy. Kobe and Tracy, they were selling shoes. Adidas was doing well. We had enough money because I'm going to give you the number. LeBron's high school team plays a game in Los Angeles. They played another great high school team, and everybody was there. Phil Knight was there. You know, George Rowling, my arch enemy, was there for Nike. And then me and Pam were there on the other end of the thing. So we see him. So when that's over, now I never, ever discussed anything, and we never went over, and I didn't have no contracts, and I want anybody to understand. But on the night of that game, it was actually the night I think Ohio State beat somebody for the championship because we had to watch the game that evening at the hotel because LeBron was for Ohio State, and I always remember that. And then we went, and I went and met with Gloria. You know, Eddie wasn't there, and it was me and LeBron and Pam. And that's who was in his room. And I told him that Adidas was going to make them. I asked LeBron a number, and, you know, I'm not going to go over his numbers with you, but he gave me a number that was very modest, very good, very modest. And at that time, Chris, now you have to understand, Kobe got about $5 million with, you know, other things in the contract. Tracy got close to maybe $1.82 million. So the numbers were moving up, but no one was paying, especially, you know, on that level. No one's paying anybody that kind of money. And Adidas was rolling. Well, I convinced the owners. This is what I convinced after we met. The owners flew in from Germany. Everyone knew what was going down. I wanted Adidas to give him $100 million, $10 million a year guaranteed. $100 million it would have come to. And it was that number then was off the wall. I mean, no one's ever gotten close to that. I was betting that we were going to bet our whole future on this kid, LeBron. And as you said, you know, Chris Rivers did work for me, Jimmy Gatto, people there, they did a lot of the legwork with the team and all that stuff. And they got to know all the players and all the people really well. Adidas, there was no other question. That didn't mean that he wasn't going to be courted by other people, because obviously he was going to be. But no one believed in him, not $100 million worth. That I do know, okay? So now we come down to the presentation. We bring him and his whole team on. Private airplane. We're going to get him a Laker playoff team. The whole team, Laker playoff tickets. This a mansion in Malibu overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And we lay out the plan. And the numbers are supposed to be $100 million. I sat down that day, just like Gloria James and his lawyer, it was Aaron Goodwin, I believe, at that time, and Maverick and LeBron, you know, all these people, like, I saw the contract. Well, it wasn't $100 million. It was like $70 million, and they had incentives on it. It wasn't so much the number of 70 or 100, because 70 was a hell of a lot of money, right? But you have to understand what it was to me. All my life, I went on the seat of my pants. Otherwise, I made every deal ever made when I worked for a shoe company, as far as the money was concerned. The reason I was, and I still am respected, I believe, in that world, is if I said something to you, you believe me, and therefore my character, my reputation, and if we had a deal, we had a deal. I did deal with the college coaches in the 70s. If I told John Thompson he was getting X thousands of dollars, if I told, you know, whoever, Jerry Tarkan, whoever those people, that was the number that Nike gave them. That was the number that when I went to Adidas they gave them. They changed the number on me. I'll never forget that as long as I live. We went into a little corner of this mansion, Gloria, me, and LeBron, and Maverick, and Goodwin, and Pam came with me, and we like when the thing. I applaud. I'll never forget what they did. They put their arms around me, and they said, "Sonny, we understand. We know what you did. We're going to be fine." And I turned to them. I'll never forget this. I turned to them and said, "You know what? You stick with your story of $100 million. They will give you close to that. Don't be telling people whatever. No one has to know whatever it is or what it is." Because I always felt, even if we would have given them the $100 million, I don't believe Phil Knight would have backed down on $100 million. The stakes were too high now because Adidas was really a relative company with McGrady and, they were having some problems with Kobe. We had Jermaine O'Neal. We had a lot of great players. We had guys on all-star teams now. Okay, and so I'm not saying, but everything was done. They didn't know anything else. I know how close I was to that family. I know how close I was. But again, it was a business, But the only thing that my life changed on, they didn't do what I asked them, and that's why they paid me. I made those decisions.
Do you think you would have gotten them if the money was right?
Well, I believe we would have. Yeah, it's hard to say that now because everything's gone so well. Yeah, do I think so? Absolutely. Or I would have forced Nike to do $120 million or $125 million. I mean, I don't know where they would have gone. I know that was like unbelievable number. So I'm saying yes. Now, if Adidas gives the $100 million, because Nike only ended up giving him $90 million in incentives. I don't know if you know the full contract. They gave him $90, okay? Now, I said then, I'll say till I die, the biggest mistake ever made in corporate America on this sort of a thing was when Adidas backed out of signing LeBron James. They signed LeBron James. The world changes. I don't know, because all you're doing now is playing results. I mean, he's with Nike, but Nike was number one before LeBron. Nike had great players, and they always will. They did. They always will. Okay, ever since Jordan, they were always number one with the greatest personalities in sport. There's no question about that, and I don't think that'll ever change. My point to you is they could have changed the landscape, but my more important point, even though Adidas has done well, they signed some really good players, and Derrick Rose was... It was a shame what happened because they signed the right guy. They gave him $20 million a year, a few years later. I mean, they paid money for Sebastian Telfer, Dwight Howard, a lot of guys. But no one ever since then has ever come to what James was. I mean, my God. So it was the dumbest, stupidest thing a corporate company ever did, regarding that they should never have allowed themselves to be put in this position. I quit. I knew I was going to quit that day. We were going, it was in Malibu, and I don't know if anybody can visualize it, but there's all these canyons, and we lived on the other side of the canyons. And this is another thing. We're riding home. I turned to my wife, my trusted companion, and I said, "You know what I'm going to do, don't you?" She said, "I know what you're going to do. You're going to quit, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah." I knew I was going to quit or get a leave. I was getting the leave. I couldn't handle it. I just couldn't do it because, you know why, Chris? For your audience, who was I going to sign the next time I promised I'd give them $5 million, $5, two uniforms? I don't know. But that's who I am. Whether you like me or you don't like me, whatever it is, just go back and check. Every guy we ever did. I could not exist in that world if my word wasn't good. Yeah. And if the people who hire me don't understand that, then I, So that's how the LeBron James thing changed the whole world. Now he's writing, hell, he's going to make $1 billion with Nike before it's all over. I mean, with this extended contract and all that. I mean, who would have thunk, right? But it's a great story.
you quit that day?
In my mind, I didn't tell Adidas for like a month after that. Yes, I went to them and I said, "I want to do one more thing. I want to do the camp this coming year or the All-Star game, whatever the hell it was." Yeah, I quit, I think, September of that same summer. Yeah, absolutely. Then Reebok came courting me, and we figured out something, and I was fine. Because I felt I didn't owe anything to Adidas, to be very honest with you.
Why did they change the number, Sonny? You told them what it was going to take. Did they just think that they didn't have to bid that much?
Yeah. I think you're that's a very perceptive answer or statement, Chris. I don't think they thought the value was there. I mean, that's the only logic. No, Chris, on a Bible, I will tell you and your audience, I was with the president and all the major people at Adidas from Germany. They flew in. We had this meeting. Then we did those tele things where we could communicate from the office in Beaverton to Germany. This wasn't done on a whim. That number, I talked to them, looked them in the eye at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Malibu, and I said, this is what I'm going to do. And they said, yes. I never would have said that to LeBron James. I mean, what advantage was that to lie? I mean, my God, knowingly you're going to lie. No, they okayed it. Listen, when I said I made the deals, what I would do is I would go to, Phil Knight, or I would go to Heinrich, the guy that ran Adidas, and I went to Tom Schein when I eventually worked. I'd say, this is what the value is. This is what we're going to offer. But they would have said, no, they gave me the money. I mean, I couldn't overspend, but they took my word and used that as the barometer for the pay scale of the athletes. There's no question about that. That's, again, these are the facts of life that some people don't want to accept. That's how it happened. So they knew $100 million. That was, I didn't spring it on them that day. They knew for nine months.
So when they offered 70, it was just, that was it like insulting to you.
It was a song that I broke my word. Absolutely. You know what, Chris? The bad thing would have been, I mean, not so bad would have been, if they had said 70 was the number I could go to when I first said the word to the kid, to the family, to Gloria. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I just had to have the right barometer. This is what I thought the value was. It was my opinion. Their opinion was $70 million. Okay, they lost. You know, what good was that I was right? It makes no, as far as professionally. I mean, that's, but I was right, wasn't I? And he's worth a hell of a lot more now.
Is there anyone now? You know, we went through these guys, Jordan, Kobe, yeah. McGrady, LeBron. I mean, you pegged them. If I just said, hey, Sonny, you know what? Come out of retirement, join my shoe business. I'm going to start a shoe business, right? And I'm going to give you a blank check to sign any young player right now. Who would you go sign? Is there anybody you think, right, would be worth it?
Well, you mean, are they playing in pros? Are they playing in college? Or
No, pros. I mean, like, let's say a rookie.
Okay. Well, I don't think so, because obviously the numbers have gone down. I got on your program last year. We were talking with the other station, and, Ben Simmons was the guy. Well, Ben Simmons didn't get his dollars. The kid from Duke didn't get $100 zillion. The numbers are down now because no one's created a mystical or real figure of the athlete today in college. They don't have to do it anymore. Everyone sort of got them. Adidas got a hell of a stock now. I mean, if Derek comes back and, they signed the kid, last year. I think they got Wiggins or whatever. But my point here is they have a lot of athletes. Under Armour is the one to come up. I mean, the Steph Curry thing was one of the luckiest good things a shoe company's ever had, other than signing Jordan, because Steph was already in the league and all this sort of stuff. And then he comes out and sells $1 zillion worth of shoes. Steph Curry, to me, and Durant are the ones that are interesting. I mean, because they're great, great, great players. I believe in phenoms got to be helpfully guided by the public. The trouble with Steph and Kevin is they weren't part of the phenom thing. There's an aura about a new singer, a new actor, a new whatever, anything new, a young person. You know what I mean?
Sonny, you don't think you would have gone to the wall for Simmons or Ingram?
No. I don't know. I think I've discussed. I don't think there's anybody even playing. The end result now. I mean, is there anybody? I mean, Steph is the right one because he's proven it, and Durant is brilliant, and Westbrook is brilliant. I mean, Russell's the face of Jordan now. I mean, he's getting probably 20 plus million a year. I mean, my God. But we have very good players marketing the shoes now. I don't. When I was doing this, and especially the easy part of Jordan, no one was doing anything. They just didn't think you had to do it. So that was the whole key there. The best part of Bryant and McGrady, they come AB. I don't know if you know, but I was involved a little bit with Kevin Durant. He was the first high school, and I guided him. I didn't, there weren't shoe deals. He didn't get a lot of shoe deals. But What happened with Kobe? See, this is my thing to your audience. We created the mythology of Kobe and Tracy coming out of ABCD camp. And LeBron James, you know, Chris, you didn't even ask me the most important question. LeBron James only came to ABCD 1 year, the junior year. He did all this his junior year. He didn't go to camps his senior year. He hurt his thumb or something, which was the greatest thing, I don't know, his wrist. I always teased him. I said, that was a great thing. Otherwise, he didn't have to go. He was beyond interviews anymore. LeBron was off the chart. Sports Illustrated, all these things. That was the mythology of the early 1990s and early 2000s until LeBron. Because after that, the mythology eroded. I mean, it didn't happen anymore. It wasn't like it was. They were known. But today, I don't know. I mean, hell, Westbrook is brilliant. I mean, you know, James Harden, and you can sit there and say they're not selling shoes or they are selling shoes and all that stuff. I don't want to get into that. I'm telling you about ability from players. These kids are good. They're really talented, my God. So what college guy do you see? I mean, come on, we saw the Simmons kid. We talked about this last year. You know, he was all this. His team didn't get to the damn thing, and he was still the number one pick and the highest paid, I believe. I think he got more money than the Ingram kid who went to the Lakers. But I'm saying those numbers are, you know, the throwaway numbers to, you know, when I was in business.
He is Sonny Vaccaro. We got to take a quick break. We're going to get a couple thoughts on the NBA season coming up.
Hey guys, this is Mallory Rubin, deputy editor of TheRinger.com. I wanted to tell you about a new podcast feed, Ringer University, where Ben Glicksman and I will be hosting a Tuesday college football show, and Chris Vernon, the newest member of the Ringer family, will be hosting a Friday gambling preview. We're going to recap the biggest action, preview the most compelling games to come, and talk about all things college football. Make sure to subscribe now to Ringer University on iTunes or wherever else you get podcasts. Thanks for listening.
All right, Sonny, let me ask you a couple things about this upcoming NBA season. Is Durant signing and now going to be playing for the Warriors, is that good for the NBA or bad for the NBA?
I don't really care about the NBA. I mean, I think it's good for basketball, if that's your question. My point, what I said about the NBA, I mean, you know, there have been super teams. There's never been a signing like this. This is what the disagreement is. Kevin wanted to go there. They could do it. Other people bid for him. What you're going to witness this year is the greatest microscopic, dissection of that particular move throughout eternity. If they do not win it, Kevin loses big time because they're going to blame it on Kevin. You know that, don't you? I mean, if they do win it, he'll have added to one of the greatest collections of players already there and an unbelievably great player in his own right is Steph Curry. So the fun of this year for the fan is can they do it? It's obscene to think they're going to win 74 games. I don't care if everybody goes there. And, you know, it's almost obscene because of the human frailty playing a game every, you know, you think. So I think it was good for basketball. I think it was good for basketball. I love super teams. I love super, and I love people who are pretty damn good because what we watched last year was a great, great team be beat under all the circumstances of what LeBron did. And Chris, I remember talking to you that you never thought they'd come back from 3-1. That was great for basketball, and that cemented LeBron James for all eternity that thing year. If someone should do that, then I think you're going to have to think, I don't know if anybody can do it.
Well, it's weird, Sonny, because forever, LeBron has been like Goliath, right? He's not the – he ain't the underdog in the situation. Whereas now – it has kind of like, I think we do kind of have to recalibrate. He's kind of been the villain. He's kind of been the best guy. And people want to get chinks in the armor on him. But now, like, he kind of changes roles where it's like if LeBron does it, I don't know. It feels like maybe for the first time, he's not the favorite, you know?
I believe he's not, just like he wasn't last year. I believe this is the maturity and the greatness of LeBron James surfaced last year and is surfacing this year. This is going to be the biggest challenge, and this is why the NBA is going to be hot, because they got some great individuals, some very, very good teams in the Western Conference. I mean, other people have helped themselves. We're going to, through the year, talk about, the maturity of the whole league and the greatness of the league. But the biggest story is, if Cleveland plays Golden State in the finals this year, then you're going to see astronomical numbers off the wall. That is what everybody wants. That's what they want. This is the Goliath and David. Only they just don't know who Goliath is now, right? It's supposed to be Golden State, and David is now, woo, LeBron. Oh my God, that's interesting, isn't it?
All right, let me ask you about two other big free agents, and they're in the East. And one of them is, and he's kind of an afterthought now, Dwight Howard going to Atlanta. Al Horford ends up in Boston. Which of those do you think is more impactful? Horford going to Boston, Howard going to Atlanta. And is Howard still a big star to you? Is he a superstar?
Well, that's the question. I think he still... All of my guys tell me he still does, but he's the strange superstar. He really is. There's personality traits about, you know, him that don't allow him to be maybe what he should have been, what we all wanted him to be. I truly believe he was capable of. I think that's what happens here. So when you're asking me that question, if he does what he's supposed to do, they're both in the East, so you're going to get that comparison very, very easily. Boston has an unbelievably great nucleus with Horford. Horford is very, very good. But you know what? It's interesting. He's made some All-Star teams. No one's ever talked about him being great or being in Hall of Fame, right? I mean, being honest. But he could fit into that Boston team, and they can do great. I think their team, at least from what I know on the surface, all those young kids, if they mature and do right, Boston's going to be damaging. But Atlanta, if Howard goes back to being the all-star, and I'm not fair to your audience right now. If he goes back to being the all-star, then Atlanta can be very good because he is that good. I don't know if Horford was ever thought of as being Hall of Fame material. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The physical abilities of Dwight Howard are special. Okay, now does he do it? I don't know. I know it's in his mind because he certainly didn't do it last year or the year after. It's just, you know, the debacle from the Lakers. But it's an unfair question to me because I don't want to ever hurt your audience by being misleading. I can't give you an answer. I think Horford, because of his demeanor, fits in better. I don't think they're looking for him to be the ultimate catalyst. You know, there's some pretty damn good players on there that we know all the young players. They mature. You know, Brad's done a great job over there. But if Howard is an all-star, if he's on the all-star team, if we are talking in February, then I think Atlanta's having a great year.
Last thing, Sonny. This may not be fair, or you may not be able to be objective about this because you have known Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah both since they were basically fetuses.
Right.
And you've been close to their families forever. That's who the Knicks are banking on, though. Getting Rose, getting Noah. Smart move? How do you think it works out?
The best move of the summer, other than getting Kevin Durant. I don't care. All the naysayers can do what they want, okay? Let's allow them to be in physically okay. They won't be who they were when they were very at the top of their game. But, hell, what did the Knicks have? I mean, you know, all it cost them was a couple of dollars of money. I mean, they paid a lot of money. But I think that is going to be the surprise team in the East. I think they'll be in the playoffs. I think Derek and Joakim are going to add a lot to it. If Derek Rose, because I'm really biased here, because he would have been one of the greatest players ever to play, I believe he wouldn't have got injured. If he's anywhere near that, you know, and Carmelo Anthony's now got a chance to become a true great, great player. He's got to get this team in there, because it's his team. They mortgaged the house for him, all that, and he is a brilliant player. But if the energy of Joakim Noah goes back to the former one 3 years ago in Chicago, where he just makes everybody better and he flies on the floor and he doesn't get injured, I thought it was the best acquisition of the summer. And I know your audience, you know, your producers probably think I'm crazy, because I know what they've done. No one probably can ever do what they've done, you know, a few years early in overcoming these injuries. If they get past that, the Knicks are going to be in the playoffs, if that's what you're asking. I would bet whatever I could bet on. I don't bet anymore, but that's what I would do. And And I think they'll win a round in the playoffs. I think they could be that good, yes.
Well, we got a couple of weeks until the season is going to get going. I hope you'll join me throughout this NBA season. Sonny, you're the best. Thanks, buddy.
I'm the one that enjoys it. God bless you, and I'd be happy and proud. And you know I like to talk, and there's no question out of bounds with me. So let's roll the dice.
My man, Sonny Vaccaro, joining us on the Ringer NBA Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.